14th, 2016. Gainesville, Florida. And we're going to be going over Manushiksha, verses 4 and 5. So I think most of you have been here for the other sessions?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll just do a really quick running through. And if I'm talking too fast, it's because I'm talking too fast, because we're just racing. Okay. So again, we're studying this because it's a padati. It's a step-by-step guide to attaining Krishna in Vrindavan. And it establishes Bhakti Siddhanta as following the inner path. And we did the three verses of qualification. To have great love for our gurus, our teachers, to have one-pointed affection for Radha and Krishna, love for the holy land of Vrindavan, love for all sacred places, love for the topmost devotees whose minds dwell in Vrindavan, love for people of all traditions, even if their minds don't dwell in Vrindavan, love for any teachers of God and morality, love for the sacred mantras that we get from guru, love for the primary holy name, and a meditation on Nandagram. Some close-up of that meditation. And along with that love, giving up of pride, having humility. Without humility, we cannot progress. We cannot be instructed. We cannot experience love. We're just going through a quick review. And then the second verse of qualification, to give up attachment to dharma and adharma, not to think oneself a good or a bad person, but instead to do akarma. That both karma and vikarma entangle us. And this can also mean that the neophytes may have to still do dharma, but the advanced devotees can just surrender to Krishna. Not to be entangled in the rat race, but to do everything for Krishna as a secret agent, to offer everything to Krishna. In terms of one-pointedness, to see Lord Chaitanya as Krishna, to see all the avatars as Krishna. Talked about how Naraganath Das Goswami says Krishna is the son of Nandamaraj, and to worship Radha Krishna. And for that, we had a painting of Radha Krishna's wedding in Bandiravan. To see the guru as the dear friend of the Lord. And the third verse of qualification is to be willing to have austerity life after life to attain Krishna, not to be impatient. To follow Swarup Damodar Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami, who teach us how to go from Vaidhi Bhakti, where we just follow the rules out of fear, half asleep, to Raga, where we awaken to our real identity. This is taught by Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who taught the outer path to the Keshava Pandit, the inner path to Raghunath Das Goswami. And we talked a little bit about how the inner path to Raja, taught by Raghunath Das Goswami, is particularly what's exemplified in Bhakti Siddhanta's logo of the Gaudiya Math and in his teachings, and has been expertly presented and packaged for the world by Srila Prabhupada. Whether in Vaidhi or Ragmarg, one all does the nine processes of bhakti, and gradually one's inner proclivity awakens just like the bud of a flower. And there are the five primary rasas: servitorship, like Rakpak and Patrak; friendship, like Subal and Uttala; parental, like Mother Yasoda, Mother Rohini, Nandamaraj; and conjugal, like Srimati Radharani. And this verse is the awakening of Raga, or at least the desire to awaken Raga, the desire to love Krishna in Vrindavan. And here we see the leaders in all of the rasas, along with Krishna. All right, so now we're qualified.
Yay!
All right,
we did it.
We got our admissions letter. Da da da! One of my grandsons just got his admissions letter. Vikram, who was here last time, he just got admitted into University of Hawaii. Grandma, I'm admitted. Yay, I'm done. No, you're not done. Now you're going to go on the path. Okay. Now, I'd like us to keep in mind as we go through these next four verses that In verse 3 can apply to those in whom Samraga for Krishna has already awakened. So the first predilection, the first stirrings of a feeling in one of the Saibhavs, in one of the five primary relationships, is already awakened by verse 3. So keep in mind that these descriptions Jagannath Das Goswami is given of the anartas that one has to go through, the subtle contaminations, also apply to devotees who've already awoken to their relationship with Krishna. So these descriptions are not talking about like some grossly sinful, wretched, horrible person. We're talking about a very exalted personality. Okay? And again, if one is not already awakened, then this can apply to one who desires to awaken to their spiritual identity, as distinct from someone who's just chanting Hare Krishna because it's the cultural thing to do, or they hope they're going to get money or something. So these are the process of elimination of obstacles, going subtler and deeper and closer to the root with each step. Now, I warned you all before, and I'm going to warn you again. This is deep stuff, and it's real, and it unpeels the layers. And the more you study this, the more that you'll become aware of these difficulties in your own life. Of course, when I taught this in Los Angeles, one of the devotees said, as you're going through this, I can think of so many devotees I know who have these problems. I did not give the obvious response to that. One thing that I found very helpful also in the fact that we got all these illustrations in Manushiksha, you know, we have all these black and white illustrations for each of these different obstacles, is I found that by doing this, as in my life, I actually do these problems, then immediately I can think of the picture as a memory aid. Oh yeah, right? Oh yeah, it's like that. It's like that. You know, today we went to have lunch at Prime Govinda Prabhu's shop. I had a meeting with Vishnu Bar and Sesha Prabhu. And so one other woman came in who comes there regularly, and Prime Govinda Prabhu starts praising me to her. And my mind started saying, yes, yes, it's all true. And then immediately I thought, oh, that's the donkey urine. There we go, stop bathing the donkey urine. So these things are they're very helpful to us that we can recognize these. And I had one gentleman in Houston tell me, you know, I think this is a little crude. So I said to him, actually, it's not my crudeness, it's Jagannath Das Goswami's crudeness, so you'll have to argue with him. And he's a very sophisticated pakka gentleman of hundreds of years ago. So. All right? So please don't mind that his analogy. Sometimes with crude metaphors, it becomes. Okay. All right. So this first area is what we talk about. What we talk about. What we hear. We talk about what we hear. We're going to go from talking to doing to wanting to craving. So what do we talk about? Again, remember our benediction of singing the verses sweetly? That we get the jewel of love of God just for singing them sweetly and through the Jagannath Astakam. Okay, everybody together? Asadvartavesha Vishrajamati Sarvasvarini Katamuti Vyagrana Shunukira Sarvatma Gilani Abhitrata Lakshmi Patirati Mito Vyomagayani Raja Raha Krishna Swarati Manita Tram Bhajamana. Oh mine, abandon the prostitute of mundane talks who plunders all intelligence. Do not listen at all to the stories of the tigress named Mukti, liberation, who devours all souls. Moreover, also give up attachment to the husband of Lakshmi, Shri Narayana, who only leads one to Vaikuntha. Instead, hear in Vraja the service of Shri Radha and Krishna, who give one the jewel of their own love. Remember, Srila Prabhupada often says, a well-dressed fool is not recognized until he opens his mouth. We see this with the modern politicians, right? They look very sophisticated with their suit and tie. And then they talk, and we can see that they're a fool. If you really want to know somebody's mood and mentality, listen to them speak. Listen to them speak. A few weeks ago, one devotee called me about some service, and half of the conversation was him telling me how qualified he was to do everything. And nobody was as qualified as he was. And it was interesting because I was thinking that I very much doubt that this devotee was aware of how half of his talking was in self-glorification, and quite extremely so. Every once in a while I'd say, well, there's so-and-so devotee who's also worked. Oh yes, but he has this fault and that. She has this fault, and I have. And I really thought that this person is probably not even aware. And I know myself, I've said some things that devotees have turned around and looked at me and said, really? We reveal our heart's desires, what we want, by what we say, what we talk about. What are we talking about? And what do we listen to? So we can have these qualifications, I love Krishna, I love Guru, I love Vrindavan, I want to awaken my relationship with Krishna. I want to serve Krishna as a secret agent. Right? I'm not going to be a good person, bad person in the world. All these qualifications that we talked about. But if we're talking about material things and listening to material things, that is an indicator of our heart. It's like you go to the doctor, they take your temperature, they take your blood pressure, they see how much oxygen is in your blood. You ever been to the doctor and they do all these things? Your weight, and your height, and all these. And this way they can gauge your health. So if you want to know what is someone's spiritual position, what do they talk about? Are they always criticizing devotees? Are they always lamenting? Are they always hankering? Or are they talking about totally mundane things? Now, not only is what we talk about and what we listen to the gauge of where we are, but it also is creating our future. The whole material world is created by
sound.
And Prabhupada says in the third canto, we each create our own future also by sound. Sound creates our subtle body, which then creates another ghost body. So whatever we talk in here about, it's an indicator of the current state of our heart, and it is creating our future. And we often can tell this with other people, right? Listen to other people talking, and we have some idea of their psychology and what their desires are. So he gives two categories of talk. One is the prostitute. And this is regular, mundane talk. Now this prostitute is stealing a jewel out of his heart, and this is the jewel of all these wonderful qualities and qualifications we had in the first three verses. It gets stolen. So why do you think that Raghunath Das Goswami, this is the benefit of going slowly through Manushiksha, I'm going to ask you, why do you think Raghunath Das Goswami is using this metaphor of a prostitute for hearing and talking about ordinary, mundane things? Anyone have any idea? Yes?
Because someone who patronizes a prostitute is unchaste. So
being unchaste to Krishna, okay. That the patron of the prostitute is unchaste, okay. Any other thoughts? Yes?
Is that for just a little temporary pleasure with the prostitute, he's losing something more subtle and pure, like basically his own purity. And so similarly, by associating with the prostitute of mundane talks, he's losing these really valuable gems of the first three verses, those pure qualifications that enable us to develop our love for Krishna.
Excellent. So just like with the prostitute, you get momentary pleasure and you lose so many things. You don't only lose your money, you lose your purity, you lose your reputation, you may destroy your family, you may lose your job. Right? And for the temporary pleasure of mundane talk, you're losing your spiritual wealth. Any other ideas why the metaphor of the prostitute? Yes?
Very alluring.
Very alluring. Very alluring. Mundane talk is very alluring. I mean, I wonder if we could calculate how many minutes a day we spend in mundane talk and mundane hearing. We're obviously allured by it. Even in the Hare Krishna movement, I have to frankly say that there's a lot of mundane talk that goes on. What to speak of the criticism of the devotees that goes on, that kind of really dangerous mundane talk. Some devotees have whole websites, just devoted, that's all they ever do. Isn't that weird?
ISKCON sewer inspectors.
The ISKCON sewer inspectors, yes. I mean, they're really, seriously, they're devotees, and they'll even tell you. They'll say, this is my service, Prabhu, to expose everybody else's faults and meditate on them. Yes. So another reason I was thinking of is that as a prostitute is offering something that's a semblance of love and affection. Right? It's something, a semblance of connection and love and affection. But does the prostitute love their customer? Not at all. In fact, prostitutes generally have only contempt for their customers. When we lived in New York many years ago by the 55th Street Temple, it turned out there was a brothel in the basement. It took me a while to figure it out. You know, every once in a while you wonder, why are all these young women going down to do their laundry all the time? And one time when I went down to do my laundry, I saw this door open at the end of the hall, and there was a bar in there and all these things. And one thing you noticed about these women is they were very hard. You have to be fit to do that profession. You have to cut yourself off from your natural feelings. And they were really hardened people. So they're promising, it looks like, you know, some attractive woman who's going to give you love and affection and praise or whatever, you know. But really, they are hard-hearted. They have to be hard-hearted to survive. And all they're interested in is your wealth. And how many people have lost everything by consorting with prostitutes? And how interesting. I'll assume that none of us here would literally go to a prostitute. But yet, we will invite the prostitute of mundane talks into our life. Right? And steal all of our wealth. And then you wake up with nothing. Now, perhaps that's not so surprising, but then he calls talking about liberation as a tigress. Talking. We're not here to deal with desires. We're dealing with talk. Oh, I'm so miserable. I just wish I could die. Oh, how long, much longer do I have to stay in my body? Talking about liberation. Listening to about liberation. Why do you think he gives the metaphor of a tigress who's ready to eat our very self? Yes?
Is it because that mentality is so opposite to the nature of the soul?
Wow.
Like, even with the prostitute, it's like the nature of the soul is to be enjoying and active. So in that instance, it's using your capacity in the wrong way. Like,
okay.
I'm talking not about Krishna, so I'm using my natural capacity in the wrong way. But, like, liberation, like, the merging business, that's, like, literally... opposite of the nature
of the soul. Yes, very nice. Some more thoughts? Why a tigress? Now, some people keep tigers as pets. Yes, and sometimes they get eaten by them. Right? People keep these all like a strange pet. Sometimes you read in the headlines, you know, man doesn't show up to work for 4 days and they come home and find a python with a huge lump in its belly. It's a pet python that ate the... I mean, it happens, seriously. You know, nice tiger.
Yeah.
Beautiful tigers are beautiful. Yes?
Would it be because the tigress is like in the mode of passion? And when we speak about these things, we're doing it in the mode of passion?
That's a very interesting thought. Generally, the desire for liberation is said to be in goodness or even transcendence. But it is a very self-centered concept, even if it's in one of the higher modes. And something that I've been meditating on lately, and one devotee was speaking to me very wonderfully about these things, is that the desire for liberation is against the desire for love, something what you were talking about. And I think about in Jiva Goswami's Madhava Mahotsava, at the end, Radharani, who's crowned the queen of Vrindavan, she says, may all those who are bound be liberated! And you think, well, that's nice. And her friends start crying. Because they're bound to her in love. Remember when Krishna went to Rukmini and he said, okay, now you're free to go. Did she say, great, I have my whole life ahead of me. But she fainted. So when you love somebody, right, those of you who are married, if your spouse were to come home and say, okay, you're free now, you're liberated, bye. You know, I suppose if you had a miserable marriage, it might be okay. You know, generally, if there's love, that's going to be disturbing. Now, you could say, well, isn't liberation included in bhakti and prema? Yes, certainly. Certainly. One is fully liberated from the modes of nature, one is serving Krishna totally out of freedom and voluntarily. But this idea of just being free and detached, and Raghunathdas Goswami is talking to us about rati and raga, having great attachment and great love for Krishna and the devotees. And the desire just for, you know, for super detachment and super renunciation is not really what we're looking for. Wasn't it you that mentioned Sudama?
Yes.
And Bhaktivinoda Thakura's commentary compares the desire for liberation to a prisoner who wants to commit suicide. By the way, for our black and white drawings, we had different artists do them, and this verse 4 was illustrated by Padma. And she also did color versions of them. So I put the color versions in the PowerPoint, though the black and whites are in the book. And I really like this one particularly. I think she really did a good job with the lighting and the mood. You know, I'm miserable in prison, let me just die. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakura echoes Rupa Goswami in saying that the desire for bhukti mukti, the desire for material opulence, and the desire for liberation are like two witches. But again, the emphasis here is not so much on the desire, but on speaking. Speaking about material enjoyment, or listening to it, having other people speak about it, that you hear it, and speaking and listening to liberation. Now, the third thing that Raghunathdas Goswami says in this verse that is an obstacle is perhaps a little odd. He says, give up your affection for Lakshmipati. Lakshmi is a goddess of fortune. Pati is a husband. Give up your affection for the husband of the goddess of fortune. Why is he calling Narayana Lakshmipati? So Bhakti, who asked this question the other day? Who was the person?
It was Kamen who asked. I don't think he's here.
And he's not here. I told him we'd do it in verse 4. Okay. Oh, well. So what can we do? So Bhaktivinoda Thakura, in his commentary on this verse, says that those who live in Vaikuntha, they have an attachment to enjoying the Lord's opulences. Now, either they're really attached to enjoying the Lord's opulences, or they're serving and they're somewhat attached to enjoying the Lord's opulences. Because the residents of Vaikuntha are mostly in what two relationships with Krishna?
Neutrality
and servitorship. So those who are in neutrality are not even doing active service for Nimai. For Lakshmi Narayana. They're just there in the Lord's kingdom, relishing being in the Lord's kingdom. Now, the difference between the residents of Vaikuntha and, say, the demigods, is the residents of Vaikuntha are not trying to personally enjoy anything separately from Krishna. The demigods want to enjoy opulences by the grace of the Lord, but they want to enjoy them. In Vaikuntha, it's not by the grace of the Lord, it's with the Lord. So, I was talking to someone the other day who said that he really liked to have wealthy friends. And I said, well, that's interesting. I said, because one devotee advised me years ago that if you want to have a happy married life, never associate with people who are more opulent than you are. Then you'll start desiring, you know, to keep up with the Joneses. But this friend of mine said, well, you know, the nice thing about being with rich friends is when their kids have a birthday party and they spend $10,000 on their six-year-old's birthday party and they get a bouncy castle and they get a magician, and they rent the country club with the swimming pool, we get to go and have that for our kids too. And when you have a rich friend who has a yacht, you get to go on their yacht. Now, it's not that he's friends with these people because he wants to go on the yacht. See, that's the demigods. The demigods want to go on the yacht, so they make friends with Krishna so they can go on the yacht. So he's genuinely friends. He says, I genuinely like these people. I'm genuinely friends with them. And I also enjoy the fact that I can go on their yacht with them. I enjoy the fact that my kids can go to the party with the magician and the bouncy castle and the pool with them. So that is the mood of Vaikuntha. The mood of Vaikuntha is I want to enjoy the opulences. So I'm looking at Lakshmipati. It's not material. It's not material. These people are liberated. They're pure. But Raghunathdas Goswami is saying, give up your affection for this. Why? Because that's not the mood of Vrindavan. Narayana and Krishna are the same person. The same person. So the gopis, when they see Krishna in his form of Narayana, all they say is, where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? So those are the same person. The residents of Vrindavan are not interested in dealing with Krishna in this mood. The residents of Vrindavan are not thinking, oh, we really want to enjoy the Chintamani gems and the desire trees and the Sarabi cows with Krishna. All they're thinking about is, I want to make Krishna smile. I just want to make Krishna smile. They're really not inclined towards the opulences. And again, the difference is subtle because the residents of Vaikuntha also want to please the Lord. They don't want to enjoy the opulences separately from the Lord, like persons in the material world. Okay? So how do we get free of these three things? The prostitute of mundane talks, the tigress of talks of liberation, and affection for this grand opulence of the Lord. Most religions in the world, you know, really they're aiming for the super soul, their concept of God the Father and the witness. But at best, they're aiming for this idea of the opulent kingdom. And he says, well, you have to get a jewel. You have to get a jewel. So today we were at Prangobinda Prabhu's jewelry shop. So he has all these jewels, some of them very large. And he studied the science of jewels for healing. Now Prabhupada writes about in the fourth canto how Dhruva Maharaj, before getting on the Vaikuntha airplane, put on jewels. He said, today we don't have so much access to such jewels, or if we have them, we can't afford them. He said, so today we just wear tila. But these jewels have power. They have potency. So we have a jewel that's so potent, that's so beautiful. He was showing us this one opal from Australia. I don't know, how much did he say it was? I don't know, $15,000 for this little teeny tiny opal. If you've ever seen opals, beautiful. You just practically become hypnotized by the stone. So this jewel is something of great beauty and power. And it's so powerful and it's so beautiful that in comparison, one becomes disinterested in the prostitute and the tigress and the opulence. And what is this jewel? This is the jewel, specifically Raghunath Das Goswami said, of the love that Radha and Krishna have in Vrindavan. But in general, the love of Vrindavan. And again, like all the oil paintings we had done for this book, they're all not only illustrating the verses, but they're taken from descriptions elsewhere in the Shastra and by the Acharyas. This is from Pastime at Noon, where after bathing in Radhakund, Radha is decorating Krishna in a pavilion. And then it's explained that Krishna's top knot is giving auspiciousness to all of the worlds. So he says, get the jewel of their own love. What is this love of Radha Krishna? We were reading a little bit about the love of Radha Krishna in this morning's class from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And especially in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj has wonderful descriptions in the Adiyula of the love of Radha Krishna. And there's also some wonderful descriptions, of course, in the talks with Ramananda Roy specifically. And again, with Lord Chaitanya teaching Sanatana Goswami, and finally, of course, Lord Chaitanya exhibiting this love at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita specifically. So it is just a giving. In this world, our relationships are taking. The prostitute's not giving anything but an illusion, right? The tigress as a pet is only giving an illusion. They're both really enemies. Whereas this love is really giving. It's real love. It's authentic. And if we get even a little, even if we get only a small jewel, even if we only get a 1-carat jewel of this love, it is so real and it is so satisfying that whenever we are tempted to go visit this prostitute or pet this tigress or meditate on how I want to enjoy in the kingdom of God, that if we just hear about, talk about the behavior of the residents of Vrindavan, not only Radha Krishna, but all the residents of Vrindavan. And I was actually just hearing Prabhupada say that this morning. And verses in the Bhagavatam, beginning of the 10th canto that Prabhupada translated. How just hearing the pastimes of Vrindavan, this was the pastimes there was about, I think, baby Krishna kicking the cart. And just hearing these wonderful pastimes, this it's real. There's a genuine exchange of love. I mean, it was so interesting when Nanda Maharaj hears from Vasudev there may be some disturbance in Gokula. All he thinks about is Krishna. Oh, I don't want Krishna to be harmed. I don't want Krishna to be harmed. And it's Of course, in regard to Narayan, it's fascinating that he prays to Narayan to protect Krishna. The sweetness, particularly the parental mood. But meditating on this love, Mother Yasoda loving Krishna, as Akendra Prabhu said, how she would die a million times to save Krishna from one drop of perspiration. Like the love of the plants and the creepers for Krishna. So this just giving selfless love that fills one with joy. And to absorb ourselves in that. And please never think you're too much of a beginner, you know? Prabhupada translated Krishna book in the very beginning of the movement. So it's not that as beginners we should read things like Govinda Lilamrita, but Gita Govinda. But even the beginners can read Krishna book. We were distributing Krishna book at the airports to ordinary people. Right? And in the old days, we used to read Krishna book before we went to bed at night. You know, we'd come back from Sankirtan, you remember that? Right? And we'd sit around and we'd drink our hot milk and read Krishna book. So absorb ourselves. There's at least one place where Prabhupada said, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, he said, if you're chanting Hare Krishna and you're thinking of other of material things, he says, then it is useless. Then there's this long pause. He says, or it will take much time. And I'm paraphrasing, I'm not getting exact words. And he says, why are you reading Krishna book? He said, when you're chanting, immediately you should remember how Krishna's killing some demon and the coward boys are popping. And so somehow to become absorbed in the transcendent. Sometimes Prabhupada will say, as you chant, remember how Krishna taught the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna on the battlefield. Something that you can connect with Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And this saves us. Right? Someone called me the other day and said, I'm in so much anxiety about my child and this and that and that. And I said, why don't you be in anxiety about Krishna? Meditate on how Krishna is up in the sky with Trinavarta and worry about Krishna. She said, oh yeah, that's good. All right, now we're going to go deeper. So at this point now, we pretty much, maybe we mess up sometimes, but at this point on the path of Manashiksha, we're talking about Krishna. We're talking about or things related to our service. This includes even if you're talking about, you know, how to get the money to start Govindas or something like that. It's not, that's not mundane talk. So we're in, our speaking and our hearing is all in relationship to Krishna. There we are. Ready for text 5. Asatya sakasta pradavikata pasha libiriya prakama kama di prakata patapati yatikare kale bhagava nyeham divaka bilvartma padane guru tvam utkara Now this is in quotes, so this is going to be a little dramatic here. While here on the revealed path of devotion, I have been attacked by the hideous gang of lust, etc., who have bound my neck with the troublesome, dreadful ropes of wicked deeds. I am being killed! Cry out piteously like this to the devotees of Sri Krishna, the destroyer of Baka. Almighty, they will save you from this enemies. This is Do You Walk the Talk? Do you walk the talk? In how many traditions are there preachers who they talk about God, they talk about spiritual things all the time, and then privately or secretly they're doing all kinds of other things? It happens in our tradition, it happens in every tradition. Who are some demons in our Bhagavatam who spoke wonderful philosophy?
Ranikashipu.
Another one.
Kamsa.
Great. I mean, they were speaking great philosophy. There's Ranikashipu and Kamsa.
Ravana.
Also. Right? Or even like Sukaracharya. Remember? And then actually Vishnu shows up and Balimara says, well, now he's here. They could speak philosophy, but what they lived was different. So if we've gone to the point where the vast majority of the time we're absorbed in sound about Krishna, our speaking and hearing, and we're on this shining path, Hare Krishna, And there are some thieves on this path, highwaymen. You don't have very many highwaymen in America today. You know. There's some roads in India where they say don't drive at night. And in South Africa they say, you know, when you stop at the robot, you know what a robot is in South Africa? It's a street light. Took me a long time. The robot? There's a robot? You know, when you stop at the robot, have your doors locked and your windows rolled up. Because there's highwaymen. And who are these highwaymen? And I'm sorry, our artist depicted them all as male. That was their choice. So, excuse the lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion, and madness. And they all have these ropes. And what are the ropes made out of? Wicked deeds. Now this is pretty gross. These verses today are pretty gross. The verses when I come to Monday are really subtle. These are pretty gross. But I will tell you, even though they're pretty gross, for materialistic persons, they're not obvious at all. Materialistic persons are not aware that they're talking and self-glorification. This, even this devotee who was talking to me, I'm sure was not aware that half of his talk was self-glorification. So even these gross things can be subtle. And we have so many excuses for our wicked deeds. You know, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. But even minor wicked deeds. Criticizing devotees. Wasting our time looking at cat videos on the internet. I don't know. The ropes of wicked deeds, where our actions don't match our speech. And these ropes, Raghunath Das Goswami said, are around our neck. We're like dogs. And I read some recently by Satchidananda Maharaj. She says, you know, you're pounding your head on your TV. Leave me alone! Leave me alone! And then you watch it again anyway. Right? Or Burajan Prabhu one time said that at Kartik he took a vow, I'm not going to criticize devotees, you know, and he couldn't keep it for an hour. So we're just like bound by the neck. And it's embarrassing, isn't it? Right? It's embarrassing. It requires some, what? Humility. It requires some humility to even say you're talking like a fool. It requires some humility to figure out your girlfriend is actually a prostitute. You know, your pet is actually a tigress. It requires some humility to admit that. And it requires some humility to admit, I'm like a dog being dragged around on a leash. Yes, Krishna, oh, Krishna. Remember, this is not, he's not talking about ordinary people here. These people already have. What did these people get in the last verse? They got a what?
The awakening to their relationship.
That was in text 3, and in the last one, text 4, what did they get at the end?
A taste.
A taste, in the form of a?
Jewel.
Jewel. They got a jewel. They got a jewel of the love of God. They're wearing it, or they're holding it. They're wearing this jewel. And they're still having this problem. Still having this problem. Do keep in mind that a jewel is external and localized. Keep that in mind as we go through. That'll be an important thing to keep in mind when we get to text 8. So, Raghunath Das Goswami said there's a cure for this. Do you remember what he said the cure was?
Call out to the devotees.
To the devotees of whom?
Krishna.
Krishna, in the form of what? What?
Who killed Bakasura.
Who killed Bakasura. Why? Well, Baka represents hypocrisy. And that's what this not walking the talk is all about, isn't it? If you don't walk your talk, you're deceiving others. Now, you're probably also deceiving yourself, but you're deceiving others. On Monday, we'll talk about how we deceive ourselves. But this is deceiving others. Now, why the crane? Well, the crane is a great yogi, standing on one leg in deep, peaceful meditation. Until there is a
fish.
And then back to the meditation. So this is the crane. Yes, I'm a spiritual person until something comes along I want to enjoy in the world, and then go for it, and then back to my pretense of meditation. So Krishna kills this lizard in the form of a crane. He kills this wizard in the form of a crane. Now we're asked, though, not to cry out to Krishna, the killer of Baka, but to the devotees of Krishna, the killer of Baka. Why?
The devotees are more merciful.
The devotees are more merciful, but let's think of it specifically in terms of this hypocrisy, and specifically in terms of Baka. Why the devotees of the killer of Baka?
They're the ones we're talking to on a regular basis?
Definitely. And what have they done? If they're devotees of the killer of Baka, what have they done?
The killer of Baka has already killed their hypocrisy.
Bingo. Their hypocrisy is gone. So in verse 1, we're loving all the devotees. We're loving the devotees who live at least mentally in Vrindavan. We're loving the devotees of any tradition, whether or not they live in Vrindavan. We're loving just the preachers of Dharma and religion. But when we need help with Lust and his gang, we have to go to people in whom hypocrisy has already been killed. We have to go to people who are at least one step up on the ladder than we are. They love the fact that their hypocrisy has been killed. They relish it. They are enjoying being authentic. And it's interesting that Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes a prayer specifically asking for the help of devotees like Bhishma, Narada, and Arjuna. So this is what we picked for our painting on the shining path of bhakti to help us, right? I think I mentioned before, we're selling prints of these paintings. And a few people said, oh, I'd like to have this one up in my room, you know. Help! You can see a little close-up of Arjuna, Bhishma, and Narada. Someone asked me today, so why did you go with this artist? I said, well, one of many reasons is that each person he paints, you really see a different person. You know, some of the artists, it looks like they're all kind of, everybody has the same face. You know, and he really gets this, Ganjana Prabhu in Italy, he really gets into the mood.
I really like the lighting in the pictures.
Yes, he's also excellent at the lighting, the shadows, and the depth, and the entrance into them. So these devotees of Bhakabhid, they come and they just cut the ropes. And they free us from these enemies. So how do they do that? How is it that calling for their help? Well, again, just to call for their help piteously. Help! That requires humility. That means we have to admit that we're a hypocrite. Is that an easy thing to admit? It's extremely, extremely, extremely difficult to admit. I mean, think about ordinary arguments between people, like in a family or whatever, and person A says, you know, you always do that, and person B says, well, you do that too. Right? It's so hard to admit any fault. It's so difficult to ever say, well, yes, I really do something wrong. I do something different from my ideals. I have these ideals about myself. I'm honest, I'm kind, I'm this, I'm that, I'm responsible, I'm blah, 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 blah. And it's very hard to say, you know, really, I'm not any of those things. I'm those things to a little bit sometimes, but, you know, a lot of the times I'm not kind. And when I am kind, it's because I want something from you. And, you know, I mean, to be able to admit that I'm a hypocrite, that requires an absence of pride. And we see these devotees who are happy having given up their hypocrisy. Because why are we doing this lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, wicked deeds? Because we are convinced that they will bring us happiness. And when we see these devotees of Bhakti, they're happy without that. They're happy without whatever it is that we are attached to. Your phone's fine as long as the music matches the, as long as it's like appropriate background music, but if it's not, then yeah. Sometimes I say to people, if you don't know how to put your phone on vibrate, ask your neighbor and they'll show you how to do it. So these devotees, they give us inspiration. Wow, this person is happy and beautiful and peaceful, being authentic. Being an authentic, integrated person where their deeds and their words, their spoken aspirations and their lived lives are in harmony. If they can do it, I can do it. They give us hope. They give us inspiration. They also give us guidance, which again takes humility. And that guidance, of course, also comes in the form of their books. I don't know how well you can see it, but the pages of the books are coming down and cutting the ropes. So how many times, I mean, I remember reading a story about how the devotees were distributing books in the former Soviet Union, and they came upon a family who just by reading Prabhupada's Ishopanishad became vegetarian and started worshiping deities, although they didn't even know how to have deities or how to worship them, but just from reading the books, they became inspired like that. So often just by hearing the words, sometimes it may be one sentence, isn't it? Sometimes we hear one sentence from a devotee who's free from hypocrisy, and immediately we give up some bad habit that's been dragging us around by the neck for decades, isn't it? You know, I think we've all had that experience. You just hear something and you're like, oh, why do I want to do that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes the verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about how our heart is like a crystal stone. And this, of course, was spoken by Hiranyakashipu. And that as we associate with the devotees who are free from hypocrisy, we also reflect some of their qualities. So finally we have a day where our technology worked right. Yay! Hey. And therefore we are ending on time. Yay! And never we have time for questions and discussions. Oh my God, that's amazing. So on Monday we'll be going through the last two verses on the path, which will be what we desire and what we crave. And then after that, we'll be going to the perfection. So then we'll be talking about what is the perfection and what are the steps in perfection. But as we said right in the beginning, even the instructions about perfection are also applicable to a great extent even to the beginner. So it's not that the verse is about perfection. I can't read them until I'm perfect. All right, so do we have questions or comments? Yes.
I wanted to write down the ropes that you passed through really quickly. Oh,
you want me to go back to them?
If you don't mind. I don't mind. Just tell me.
We'll just go back. Actually, Raghunathas Goswami says, kam adi, which simply means lust, etc. And Bhaktivinoda gives this particular list. There are also other lists, but this is the particular list. And I had to make kind of a decision as the producer of the book exactly which list I was going to go with, but I went with this list that Bhaktivinoda had in his commentary. Now, in the commentaries, particularly in the back section of the book, where we have the commentaries of contemporary Vaishnavas, we have a lot more explanation of this. So the devotees, they're quoting a lot of other sources from the Shastra about how these enemies relate to each other. What's their relationship? And I know I put in a verse somewhere. I don't remember if it's my commentary to this verse. I think so. About these enemies that are listed in the Bhagavatam, like that they have children and grandchildren. And, yes?
The dynasty
of the Dharma. Yes, exactly. I think it's what I wrote in. You could just grab it, take a look. Can you grab one on your tomb? We'll just take a look if it's there, because that's a.
Where is it exactly?
It which should be in verse 4 in the back of the book, if you can find verse 4 commentary that I wrote. Anybody else want to look into that? Yes.
Could you define madness?
Could I define madness? Actions without any... I mean, lust is this to a large extent, but actions without any thought to their consequence and which are entirely out of harmony with your normal state of awareness. You know, it's kind of lust, anger, envy, greed gone over the cliff. You're now so angry that you're throwing pots at your wife, you know. You've lost it. Right? You have road rage and you pull out your gun and shoot somebody because they waited at the stoplight too long. So that's beyond anger. Yes.
Even though sometimes you hear from devotees free of envy about these topics, you don't really can get it on practice. How can you qualify yourself to really understand and practice what you hear?
Well, it's not just hearing, but it's also hearing with sada dhamvan hitva, with always giving up pride. And that is the real key. It just is this thread that goes right through manashiksha, this humility. So first of all, one has to have a lack of pride to even recognize that I'm a hypocrite. With each of these, I have to have a lack of pride to recognize that in the name of service, I'm glorifying myself. Or, you know, I'm supposed to be a devotee and all I talk about is politics. I mean, I find it interesting, for example, on Facebook, if you see what people post, and there's some devotees, all they ever post about is the economy, or all they ever post about is politics, or something like that. So I pointed out to one of these devotees, I said, you know, you never post anything about Krishna. And they just had an excuse. So it takes some humility. If it's not there, then I'll have to look at it later. And I remember I must have put it in another place. Thank you for looking. So it takes some humility to be willing to hear. I mean, I'm just remembering when I first moved into the temple ashram, and a lot of the classes were about materialists, and, you know, those nasty materialists. And so for the first couple months, I'm in the class, yeah, those materialists, they're like this, and they're like that, and they really are. And after about 2 months, all of a sudden, I was in Bhagavatam class, and I went, oh, that's me. So it takes some, you know, that's hard. That's hard. To really look, to really see. You said the Chaito Dharpana Marginam. So when we associate with these devotees of the killer of Baka and we reflect them, we have to be willing to see ourselves honestly and honestly beg for help. And flat out, the reason we don't get changed is we don't want to. We want to, and we don't want to. We don't want to look at ourselves honestly. It's embarrassing. Who wants to admit that madness is pulling them around like a dog? Nobody wants to admit that. I mean, when former President Bill Clinton, when he was caught with lust, right? He was caught, and he gets up in front of all of America and says, well, not really. Right? It didn't really, I sort of maybe, what did he say? It depends what the meaning of is. Wasn't that what he said?
No, he said, I have an inappropriate relationship.
Inappropriate relationship. I think at one point he said it depends the meaning of is. And you'll find, you know, especially big people, especially the big politicians and the big, you know, when they're caught red-handed with their hand in the cookie jar, you know, and they're like, someone else put my hand in the cookie. So if we're finding that we are so, first of all, find out who you're associating with. Are you associating with other people who are just encouraging you in your hypocrisy? And then, are you willing to be honest? Are you willing? If we're willing to be honest, then purification is very fast and relatively painless. There's brief moments of pain where you have to confront your problems. But it's relatively painless. And the process of bhakti is very long and slow and difficult if you're pouring water on the fire while you're trying to light it, kind of thing. You know, if you're saying, I want to worship the absolute truth, therefore I have to be truthful, I want to be authentic, but don't reveal to me anything authentic about myself. And I've asked large audiences of devotees, I said, how many of you are willing to go in front of the deities and say, please show me all of the truth about myself? And people just kind of shrink into their seats. Is that okay? You don't have to advertise. You're not saying, Krishna, please tell everybody else in the universe all the truth about that. I can understand, you know. Who even wants to know all the truth about it? Yeah, exactly. But show me, please show me the truth about myself. And we're afraid to say that. Well, a little bit. Just let it go. Just a little bit of time, please. Right? That's the reality. And we shouldn't pray for something we don't want. That's don't ask Krishna to show you all the truth about yourself if you don't really want to see it. It won't be pleasant. And only ask for things that you genuinely want. But my point is that this is our problem. Yes. Yes.
I don't feel like it's hard for me to see that my motives are wrong, or that I feel like I'm missing something, like what you were saying earlier about how no one wants to admit I have this bad fault or I have this bad quality, but I feel like
it's pretty easy to do that. Okay, why? I'd like to ask you to make an experiment. And our next class is on Monday, so it gives you a few days. So I'd like you to make an experiment. I'd like you to ask Krishna, please take one of the faults that I'm sure that I have no problem seeing and show it to me really. Can I give you an example without being too self-revelatory here? Not that I want to talk about it. But I'll try something, sort of kind of related. So suppose you have a devotee who's, they get a lot of service done, they're really efficient, but in their efficiency, they sometimes are crude with the other devotees. Okay? Come on, hurry up, Prabhu, don't you know we have to get this offering done at 7:45, that's the time for the deities and the bus is going to come, and what is your problem?
Prabhu.
Now, if you went to this devotee and you said, do you know that you have a fault, that you are insensitive to the feelings of the other devotees when you're trying to do your service? I'm sure, in most cases, not in all, but in most cases, the person would say, sure, I know that. Are they really seeing their fault? Do they have a sense of what it feels like to be on the receiving end of what they're doing? So I had an experience a while ago that someone, and I don't want to get into the details, but somebody did something to me that caused me a lot of pain and grief. And when they did, Krishna very clearly said, you do this. And then I can understand that there was something that I had done over and over again for years and years and years in the name of service for Srila Prabhupada, for the mission, for the movement, to establish truth and righteousness, that was hurting others a lot. And then I sort of kind of knew that. And many other people had told me that. Many people had come to me and said, Arula, you have this problem. When you do this, people get hurt. I heard them. It wasn't that I didn't hear them. And I thought, well, yeah. Okay. But I have a higher purpose. It's a service. It's a mission. And I'm not intending to hurt them. I kind of just, they're sort of collateral damage. And Krishna showed me that's not true. Very clearly showed me it's true, it's not collateral damage. He showed me not only are you hurting them in the name of service, you're enjoying hurting them in the name of service. And it was very intense. And after seeing that, I said, I will never do this behavior. So when you really see your stuff, really see it, actually really see it and really own it, when Krishna shows you something real about what you're doing and you own it and you admit it to Krishna, you don't have to admit it to the world, but you admit it to Krishna, you won't do it again. So one evidence is if you just won't. Just because you'll see it for what it is. You just won't do it.
But I thought that lust, like, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna asks Lord Krishna, like,
yes,
you know, when you don't want to do something,
yes,
why do you keep doing it? It's because,
yes,
of lust.
Yes.
So even to, like, that really relates to my personal experience where it's like I have been on the receiving end, and then like afterwards I'm just like, ah, oh, and then I'm like, I'm probably just gonna do it, like, why now?
Then
like,
you haven't fully seen it yet. The
lust.
What's
part of the lust?
What's the lust? Yes.
When you see it, it gets,
yes,
rid of the lust.
Exactly. Because what is lust? Lust means I want something so much that I don't care what the consequences are. That's the difference between attachment and lust in the fall down process. I want something so much that whatever the consequences are, whatever. I mean, I was giving an example of former President Clinton. I mean, he was risking being President of the United States. I mean, not only his marriage, but being the president for a woman? He was risking being the president of the United States? That means, you know, that's madness. It's madness. Materially speaking, it's madness. So lust is when I want something so much that I become blind to the consequences. I'm not really aware of the consequences. I kind of shut them out. And when you see honestly what you're doing, what you're seeing is the consequences. You really understand, wow, I am damaging myself and others. And I'm hurting, mostly I'm hurting my relationship with Krishna. Krishna is in a sense, I mean, he's always joyful, but in a sense, Krishna is pained by what I'm doing. It's causing sorrow to the person that I'm trying to please and trying to love. And it's just damaging myself. You know, like people who have some sort of disease where they can't eat a certain kind of food. You know, and if they eat that kind of food, they break out in hives or they go into anaphylactic shock or something like that. So, you know, the person with a peanut allergy like that, they see peanuts and they see death. You follow? I mean, they look at it and they actually see death. If peanuts are death to you, you're not going to eat them no matter how tasty they are. So this acting against my will kind of, that's why this is, the ropes are there. You're being pulled as if unwillingly. Something else is pulling you. And it appears to be that I'm acting against my own desire. It appears that I'm a victim. Whenever you hear people talk about victimhood in regard to the things they're doing, then they're on this platform of this ropes of wicked deeds of being pulled by the neck. But when you really want to see the truth about something, and you really want to progress, and you do this by the grace of the devotees who have seen the truth and are happy with it, and then Krishna shows you this is what's actually going on. This is what you're really doing. This is what this activity, this behavior, and this verse we're talking about activities and behaviors, not about motives, but this is what your activity and your behavior is really doing to you. And when you fully see that and accept it, not that you see it and go, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. No, that's not it. You look at it and say, wow, I want to do that. I am doing this because I want to. I am doing this because I am relishing it. I am doing this because I'm enjoying it. You know, you ask a meat eater, what are they doing? They're enjoying the blood of another creature. They're enjoying the pain and suffering of another creature. That's what they're doing. And they're enjoying it. So to see that, that's not easy to see, is it? Who wants to see that? But if you actually see that, that's what all these lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, and madness are. I'm taking pleasure in something that is harmful and painful for myself and for others. And when you really see that, you will not do it. I mean, you could. It's not that your free will is taken away. You just won't. You simply won't. I mean, just like it's very, very, very rare that someone after coming to Krishna consciousness will eat meat again, even if they are brought up as a meat eater. It happens sometimes. It's very unusual.
even if they don't, if they kind of reject Christian consciousness,
yes,
they usually still
they don't. Usually don't. Occasionally, but it's unusual. Why? Because they see it for what it is. So anything you've seen for what it is, anything you're really looking at, honestly, you will not do it. And you accept it.
What do you mean?
Okay, well, sometimes we may see something honestly about ourselves for a minute and we just lament about it and we just get depressed about it. Oh, I'm such a mean person, I suck. That's not accepting it. Accepting it is, yes, I own this, Krishna. Think about it this way. I gave the example the other day. So somebody cheats you. They you know, do something nasty to you. They stole your money, whatever. They stole your husband. They did something really nasty. And if they just come, you know, and say, I really suck. Is that what you want? You know, your best friend came and they stayed at your house and they stole all your money and they just come, I'm just a terrible person. I'm just awful. I'm just terrible. Okay.
Get over yourself.
And? Yes, and?
I'm just awful. I'm such a terrible friend. I betrayed you. I'm just a hurt.
Okay, and?
Like, get over yourself.
Yeah. So we're dealing with Krishna. He's a person. What does he want? He wants to say, wow, I'm really evil. Maybe you cry. Wow, I'm really evil. I'm really awful. Lord, I want you more than I want this thing. I want you. And I've hurt you, and I've betrayed you, I've betrayed myself, I've betrayed other people. I haven't walked my talk. And I don't care what the cost is. And Maya will say, there'll be so many costs. You had a service wrapped up with this, and you had this wrapped up with this, and this wrapped up with this, and it's part of your life, and this and that, and now you do and this, and probably your wife will leave you, and your business will fail, and you'll be homeless, and everybody will hate you, and the whole world will collapse, and you can't give this up. You say, I don't care. Krishna, I want you. And I don't want to be evil in this way anymore. That's the kind of thing you want your friend to say to you, right? You want your friend to say to you, I value my relationship with you more. I put something in between me and my relationship with you, but I value my relationship with you more. And I am not going to do this again. And I want to make amends to you. Then you're interested. Right? You just don't want them to just be crying about themselves. It's not about themselves, it's about you. You're the one that they offended. They're just crying about themselves. So that's not really seeing it. Really seeing it is it's connected with our relationship with Krishna, with love. We talked about having love for Krishna right in the beginning. You gotta keep that. Remember, these people have a jewel, right? They have a jewel of love. This is connected with love. I love you, Krishna. I have some affection for you, Krishna. I care. I have love for my guru. I broke my promises to my guru. You follow? And really see it and really own it. And then it's gone forever, not because you're so great, but because as soon as you let go of something, then Krishna removes it. Okay, it really, really, really quick because we need to stop. Yes?
So, what would be the correct mindset and meditation for those people who would really know the answer to all of they're not up there, so I was just, don't do that because it's really hurting others.
What would be the correct?
What would be the meditation to finally have that realization to stop doing it, even though you know the answer to all of your problems, yet you don't walk the talk?
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
You're saying, like, if you know that it's bad, but you're still doing it again, then.
If you know that it's bad, you're knowing it's bad theory.
You know all the consequences for. Well,
you don't really know it. You need to see it. You need to feel it. If you feel it, Krishna will. If you feel it and you really in your heart are ready to give it up, regardless of the price, Krishna will remove it forever. If something is keep coming back in your life, you haven't done that. Is that all right? I need to end now. All right. Go ahead. Yes.
I was just wondering. I get confused sometimes when we say, like, we need to meditate on Krishna or then Radha Krishna when we want to, like, serve Krishna.
Okay.
And Radharani. So I don't understand, like, who are we supposed to meditate on? Radha Krishna or just Krishna? Or just Radharani? It's hard for me sometimes.
I would not suggest meditating just on Radharani. That I would not suggest. Meditating just on Radharani is there for realized souls who have a very particular relationship with Radharani. And unless that's who we are, and unless we realize that, just meditating on Radharani may get you Radharani's expansion of Durga. So if you want to meditate on Radha with Krishna, yeah, I wouldn't suggest that. But I mean, there's some pastimes just of Radharani where Krishna's not there. She's talking to the bumblebee and things like that. But generally, we want to worship Radha with Krishna. We always want to worship Lakshmi with Narayan, not separately. There are, as I say, there are some very, very advanced devotees who have a very particular mood, a very particular loving mood, that I'm the servant of Radha and I love Krishna because Radha loves him. So there are devotees who have that mood. But not everyone in Goloka Vrindavan has that mood. Some of the devotees have that particular mood. So if when you awaken to your eternal identity you have that particular mood, then that's fine. But even that you wouldn't do publicly. Because for even most of the other residents of Vrindavan, that's not their focus. Is that okay? I mean, sometimes we can pray just to Radharani. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has, in his commentary, Manashiksha, some wonderful prayers to Srimati Radharani. We can repeat those.
What about just to Krishna?
Just to Krishna is fine.
Sometimes my mind gets like, you know, I can't focus if I'm like trying to like focus on Radha and Krishna because I'm so neophyte, you know? So
I don't think you need to worry so much about it. I really don't. It's not, we're not talking about some sort of mechanical formula here. Prabhupada talked about the Hare Krishna mantra saying, Mother Hara, give me the grace of the Father, Hari. So, especially in the beginning, if you see Radha Krishna as your mother and father, you say, who do I think about? My mother and my father, or both my mother and father? You know, and I don't think that needs to absorb you. So it's fine. You want to talk to Radha Krishna, you want to talk to Krishna, sometimes you just want to talk to Radha, that's fine. But don't make it a Radha without Krishna cult. Even the GBC made a resolution, you know, not to just chant Radha's name over and over and over and over again without Krishna. Again, for certain very advanced souls, that's okay. But otherwise, it can lead to a difficult. Other than that, sure, you can pray. Sometimes you might pray in the same day. You might pray to Lord Nityananda. You might pray to, you know, Sanatana Goswami. You can talk to anyone. Meditate on anything. You can meditate on the pastimes of the devotees. Meditate on Dhruva Maharaj's pastimes. Meditate on Prithvi Maharaj's pastimes. Prabhupada said, if you just pick one pastime and meditate on that over and over again, you'll become perfect. So that's really up to, Prabhupada says, a nectar devotion, your own personal taste. And one person may be more attracted to meditating on one pastime. I know devotees who tell me, I really like meditating on, you know, Krishna on the battlefield, but then meditate on that. Like, I know one devotee who said, you know, I just really have a hard time reading Prabhupada's books. She said, especially, I just don't like so much reading Bhagavad Gita. I said, well, what do you read? She said, well, I don't read anything because I was told I have to read the Bhagavad Gita first. You have to read first the Bhagavad Gita and then the Bhagavatam and then Krishna Bhagavad and Chaitanya Charitamrita because I really don't like the Bhagavad Gita. I read nothing. And I said, what would you like? Is there any book you like? And she said, I love the Nectar Devotion. I said, well, read that. Better to read the Nectar Devotion than do nothing. Right? And Prabhupada printed the Nectar Devotion earlier in the movement. So somehow connect with Krishna. Whatever. Don't worry so much. Oh my God, I'm reading Krishna book and I haven't finished Isha Upanishad. I mean, just like, it's all right. You know, seriously. Really seriously. Just somehow or other connect yourself with Krishna. I mean, the kind of things that we want to be cautious of is reading some of the books of the acharyas that are intimate leelas that don't have philosophy and commentary in them. So Srila Prabhupada, like in Krishna book, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's discussing these very high intimate leelas, but it's all interwoven with commentary and philosophy. Whereas a lot of the books of the acharyas, they're just telling stories, you know, without any philosophical grounding. So that should be, that's, they're there and they're to be read, certainly, but it's kind of, don't try to read the PhD physics book when you're in 12th grade math. You won't even understand what you're reading. You'll come out with all kinds of distorted ideas that you'll have to fix later. So one of the benefits of not being Indian is that you probably don't already have that problem, unless you were a real, like, kind of New Agey Eastern person. Some of the Westerners kind of got into all kinds of other things. But if you're a non-Indian or non-Balinese, if you didn't come from a Hindu culture, and you weren't already exposed to all kinds of misconceptions about Krishna, then what I would really suggest is you stick, Prabhupada is absolutely safe. And read Prabhupada's books at least once through Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavad Gita and Krishna book, and then you can, that's the kind of thing you should be careful with. Like I said to that man the other day. He's reading one of the books of the Goswamis that's just, the super high leelas. That's not even for people in other rasas. Even people who awaken to be Krishna's parents aren't even supposed to read that book. It'll disturb them. So, that is what you should be careful. But other than that, and it's so easy because there's more books to read that you can read in a few lifetimes even. So there's no harm. And when things awaken, then you'll naturally know what to read on a higher level. You consult the authorities and like that. But pray to Krishna. Always just pray to Krishna. That's not a problem. Thank you very much. We still have a few books here. Anybody who wanted to get them tonight? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.